Welcome to the Connectable Podcast.
Creating connection through relatable conversation.
The Connectable Podcast starts in 3, 2, 1.
Like a pro.
Like a pro. I know, man, you're already starting off strong. This is good. This is good. So, today's guest is Happy Nguyen. Okay, I promised myself I wouldn't jack up your name, and I already did it. Happy Nguyen, right?
Yeah, close. I typically just tell people Happy Nguyen.
Nguyen?
But, yeah.
I'm Japanese. The sounds are a little different. So
yeah, no worries.
It's the owner of Good Water Fly Fishing. What's going on, man? How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good. Hey, so we like to start off this show by letting people know how we're connected to our guests, because that's why, you know, the name of the podcast is Connectable, and we're just trying to get connected, our guests connected to the audience connected to the guests, and then hopefully everybody a little bit more connected to each other. So Happy and I know each other because we actually interned together at Capital Christian for, I think, 1 year. And we had the opportunity to work together on some different things. We kind of helped lead the run club that we did over at Oak Ridge Elementary School in Sacramento. And then pretty much anything else that we had to do, we were kind of, you know, working on together. Especially in that situation, it was kind of anything and everything. I mean, I think we delivered just a ton of shoes out of a truck to the folks over in downtown Sacramento, the homeless community there one time, and just, I mean, donated, I felt like, hundreds of shoes to just people around the streets. And then there was, you know, one time I do remember you and I feel like we made a lot of moving trips, right? We had a lot of people that needed help moving or they needed, they were donating stuff. And I remember one specific incident, you and I had to go move somebody out of a storage container.
Yeah.
And we were moving this mattress, Deb, and I don't know if you remember this, Happy, but we were holding the mattress, right? And him and I were moving it down the steps, and this lady that was really nice lady.
What size mattress?
Probably like a queen. I mean, it was a decent size, right? So we're moving this mattress, and all of a sudden the lady's like, "Oh, I think that's where the afterbirth was." What? And we're looking, and unfortunately it was right where Happy had one of his hands.
Oh yeah.
On the mattress. Oh my God.
You have to understand, Happy is just the most easygoing, coolest guy. But the look on his face was like, I can't believe she just said that. And I can't believe my hand was just there. Mm-hmm. So, some nice. Wild stories for sure. But anyways, that's how we know each other. So yeah, wow. Man, like I said, I know weird stuff like that used to happen all the time. So yeah, anyways, man, we're thankful that you were willing to take some time out of your schedule to join us.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I feel like you're someone that's had a lot of, like a lot of different interests, right? Like, I feel like, you know, when we were working together, you had some interests and you were pursuing different things. And then I feel like a little while later, you were working with our friend Curtis Smith doing, you know, videography and stuff like that. And then before I knew it, you were doing this fly fishing thing.
Yeah.
So like, how did you get into fly fishing, and how did you get into this, all of this stuff that you're doing now?
Yeah. I mean, so fishing was, you know, something that was always, you know, pretty common to me growing up. You know, ever since I was a little kid, you know, my dad got me into fishing. I grew up in Michigan. So, you know, that's all everyone do up there is they either fish or they hunt. And it was just something that was just very normal to my brother and I growing up. And then when I moved out to California, I kind of stopped, you know, fishing for a little bit just because I, you know, didn't have anyone to do it with, or I didn't know how, you know, how to my way around. And at the time, how I got into fly fishing was kind of funny. I was working at a marketing company at the time, and I was, you know, doing all their videos, editing and everything like that. And one day I was just looking for, you know, just some inspiration, just looking at, you know, different companies marketing and seeing how they tell stories and do video. And I came across Yeti's YouTube page. And they have these really cool fishing videos, and they're specifically fly fishing videos. And I just thought it was just the way they put it together was very enticing. The storytelling was awesome, and it just really got me intrigued and kind of started rekindled that flame for fishing. And so I, you know, picked up my first fly rod and hit the river and caught my first trout and really fell in love with it. And at the time too, I kind of quit that job to become a freelance videographer. And my wife, I think she was about 4 or 5 months pregnant at the time. And I told myself, you know, I could quit this job, work half the time that I'm working for, work half the time that I was working and make probably 2 or 3 times more money than I was making there. But then that plan didn't really follow through because I spent most of my time fishing more than I did working. And so yeah. my wife really got on me on that. And she's like, Happy, you need to go find a job. Like, I'm pregnant. You know, we don't have anything going for us. You just quit your job. And here you are spending lots of money fishing and traveling and all going all over the place. So I told myself, I was like, wow, like, well, you know what? I'm so passionate about this. And I love doing this so much that there has to be a way to make money doing it. And so I just looked around and kind of did my research and, you know, saw that there were places that offered, guide school for fly fishing. So I took a trip out to Montana and attended a guide school for a week, and just learned a lot and connected with some awesome people and really just, pursued that passion until it kind of just became a reality for me. And like you said, you know, like my wife would agree too, like you said earlier, you know, I'm always intrigued by so many different things and always take interest in a lot of things. And there's just so much in life that, you know, it's hard to not be interested in all these things. But for me, it was just fly fishing. It was just something that really just caught on, and I took a risk and it paid off.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah.
That's so cool that you found that you figured out how to turn basically like the most fun hobby for you into a job. Like, that is awesome.
Yeah.
What is it specifically about fly fishing that gets you just, you know, you love it so much, you're passionate about it. Is there like, does it calm you? Does it put you in a different mindset? Like, what is it about it that you like so much?
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of things about fly fishing that I really like. Yeah. Kind of the couple of things that I really love about fly fishing is the amazing places that it'll take you. You know, most places where you're going to go fly fishing is, you know, very beautiful. You're in a secluded river, or somewhere out in tropic water. It's really cool. It'll take you to some cool places. I think the thing that's most important to me that I, really love about fly fishing is just the connections that you make with people out on the water. I feel like I'm a very relational person. I try to make that important in my life. And some people, you know, fly fishing for them is different. Sometimes some people like to get away and, escape whatever it is that they're, you know, stressed that they have in their life. For me, I just like to get out on the water and meet new people and have a good time.
Yeah.
That's great. I just had this thought. Did I even introduce you guys? Javi, this is Deb. I feel like I skipped over that.
Hi.
Whole thing.
No, no worries.
I'm Deb.
Sorry, everybody.
This wow. That was just delayed.
Wow, what a douche I am. I just kind of jumped in this.
And I think.
Go ahead.
That was very delayed, Josh. I'm very concerned. I think maybe we're spending too much time together because that's something I would have done.
Yeah, so. I know. Sorry. This is Happy. This is Deb. Now you guys know each other. We started this conversation. Jeez.
Nice to meet you.
I'm the worst. We've done this for 2 years. I suck. I love the pictures you post on Instagram of your trips because it's just a beautiful place. And even seeing the pictures, you can get a sense of how peaceful it is and these places that you go. So where's your spot? Like, if you have a choice, if you can go anywhere, places that you've been, where's that spot that you would go every single time? And then where is a dream location that you haven't been yet, but you're hoping to one day?
Yeah, that's a good question. This past summer, I spent my first summer up in Alaska guiding, at a lodge, and that was a pretty awesome experience for me. And I'd say one of the coolest places I've been is definitely Alaska.
Okay.
You know, it's very remote. It's one of the last places I feel like on Earth that's just been, you know, untouched by man.
Yeah.
You know, you're out there, you know, you'll be fishing and 20 feet away from you, there's a mom and a couple cubs and they're fishing as well. And, you know, there are times where you could almost reach out and touch these bears. You know, I wouldn't advise it, but, you know, just try to paint a picture of how remote and how, you know, how, things coexist up there.
Yeah.
It's a very special place. And, another place I just recently went to was Belize. And I was down there a couple weeks ago for a week and a half. And I mean, that was a life-changing experience for me, just experiencing the culture of Belize, and just, you know, fishing in salt water versus freshwater. It's just a whole different game. You know, it's almost like hunting versus fishing. If it makes sense, you know, you're stalking these very elusive fish out on the flats of Belize, and it's just a beautiful environment.
That's awesome. Now, yeah. do you have to do a lot of, I mean, I'll be honest, man, I've never been fishing, not yeah. once. Never.
Come out sometime.
I'll have to do it, man. Now that I know someone that's into it. I've never been. Oh, well, okay. I've been one time, but like basically a buddy of mine and his dad took me out and they stuck the pole in the ground. We sat there. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. I don't think I touched the pole, to be honest with you. I think he's like, this is your pole. He stuck it in the ground. And then hopefully I catch something.
Okay. Yeah.
But, yeah, exactly. But so like so when you go to a place like Belize, or if you go to a place like Alaska for the first time, like how much do you have to do research into the places, or is it like, are there certain things that are just kind of standard when you go fly fishing? That's like, okay, X, Y, and Z is the same at every spot. And then other things you have to maybe have some more knowledge of before you go there.
Yeah, for sure. So with fly fishing, you know, there, like you said, there are some things that are pretty standard that, you know, if you, some foundational things that you can build on and kind of apply to everywhere we go. As far as like Alaska and Belize, they're kind of two different types of fishing. One is saltwater and the other is freshwater. Most of the freshwater I do, we're fishing for trout. And when you're fishing for trout, any trout stream is pretty similar. The only difference is that there might be different bug life in the river. So every river will have a different type of ecosystem and a different type of aquatic insects that kind of resident in that river. And so the trout will kind of pick up on that. So that would just be kind of the hardest thing to, not the hardest, but just kind of, you know, something that you'd kind of have to learn. But for the most part, you know, from casting and learning how to properly, you know, make a presentation to a fish is pretty standard for the most part. But from a beginner's point of view, it definitely can be a little, a lot to take in at first. So like for me, my job as a guide is to be very instructional and just to teach someone the basic foundations of just fly fishing. Like, you know, like you said, you know, sticking a pole in the ground is not very fun. Like to me, that's not fishing.
No.
You know, when I picked up fly fishing, I mean, you're constantly doing things, you know, you're constantly learning how to read the water. You're constantly making casts, changing out flies to see what is working. And, it's very, interactive, you know, you're not just sticking the pole and just fishing by blind faith.
Right.
You know, everything's very calculated, and you know, your senses are very tuned to everything that's going around you.
Got it. I wish I would have done fly fishing first, because I think that first experience just ruined me. I'm like, I don't know what we're doing here. We're just it's brutal. Yeah.
And I've taken a lot of people out that says the same thing. Like,
yeah,
oh, I've never been fishing, but the one time I fished, you know, we just sat there and just threw a line out, and that's it. You know, fly fishing, you're constantly doing something. It's constantly challenging you and, you know, exercising your mind.
Yeah. Does your wife will she fish with you?
She has come out a few times, but we seem to argue more than anything when she comes out. Cause you know, I'll try to teach her, but you know, she don't really have the patience for it. And then I don't have the patience for it, cause then I just want to fish. So she has her own thing that she likes to do. So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of cool to kind of keep it that way.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah.
You gotta have your own hobbies.
Yeah, yeah. Keep the marriage together, but stay away from the fishing. That's smart. That's good. Exactly. That's all. Yeah. So go ahead, Deb.
Well, I was going to say, how long have you been doing this again? When did this start?
I picked up my first fly rod back in 2016.
Mm. Okay.
And just, you know, kind of started off as a hobby and a passion for the first, you know, year and a half or two. And then it got serious when my wife really got on me about it, because it was either go big or go home. And I just chose to take a risk.
Sweet. Yeah. What was the response like? Because I'm always interested when people start their business for the first time. Like there's always, I don't know how you felt, but there's always that, it seems like for most people, there's that point where they're like, man, I'm excited. And then the next day when they wake up, it's like, what did I do? You know, there's that kind of teeter-totter of fear versus excitement. You know, for you, what was it like when, you know, the first time you went out and you're like, I'm going to do this thing, and you did your first trip. And then what was the response like from people, you know, when you first started?
Yeah. I think, you know, a lot of, you know, as a guide, you know, you definitely got to know, how to fish, and, you know, you know, where the fish are and, you know, certain things with tackle and all that stuff. You got to know, you definitely got to be on your A game. I think the biggest mm-hmm. thing for me was just, you know, learning how to really read people and connect with them. Cause I think that will make or break a trip. You know, you can catch fish all day long, but if your guide is a total, you know, a-hole to you all day long, or isn't very, you know, kind or hands-on with you, you know, I've heard from clients that I've had out where they're like, you know, I've been out with guides who, you know, we've caught fish, but he wasn't the friendliest guy, and I'll never book with him again, cause it just wasn't a fun experience on the river. Yeah. And so for me, like, I learned that pretty early on, cause I felt like I was always very relational with people, and, you know, I enjoyed the presence of people. So I didn't feel like that was hard on me. Mm-hmm. But it was just something that I really learned right away. It was just like, man, like a lot of this is just customer service based, you know, like how you treat people is gonna really make or break their day with you. Even if you don't catch fish, sometimes people will have a blast on the water with you just because you've provided them with an awesome experience.
Yeah.
And so I think for me, that was the biggest thing that kind of just right away was something that was, I wouldn't say eye-opening to me, but just was something that I really wanted to make it a strong characteristic in my business.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. I mean, obviously speaking from personal experience, you know, on the projects that you and I worked on, like that was obvious. And once I saw that you were doing this fly fishing thing and doing these guided trips, it made sense that you'd be good at that, because you are, I think you're a patient dude. And, you know, I think when we were working together, it seems like everybody that you came in contact with, you got along with, and they seem to enjoy your company. So, like I've been on, man, I went to Maui one time with my family and we did a zip lining tour. And I'm a pretty patient person, but and pretty forgiving, but one of the guys was not the best, and he was just having a bad day. It was pretty clear. But everybody felt it. And then he wasn't getting any interaction from people. And then he got more upset. It was an uncomfortable hour and a half, 2 hours for sure. So, man, I can't agree with you anymore about this idea of like, yeah, I mean, it's like you want to provide the whole thing is the experience, right? It's not just you taking them out in nature and them fishing and catching fish. It's like, it's, you know, your interactions, the energy you bring to the table, like all of it's a huge part of it. So, 100%. Yeah, man, that's great that you understand that. Cause I think a lot of people, sometimes I feel like people think that they have the knowledge about whatever, you know, area of expertise that they have and they can just do something. Mm-hmm. But it's like, if you don't have the people skills, it's going to be tough.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. What was your most challenging part with starting your business, and what has been your favorite part about your business?
I think the most challenging thing was just really trying to, you know, in the guiding world, you know, a lot of guides are, a lot of people will either work through an outfitter or a fly shop, or they'll be basically like a just, you know, kind of like a freelancer, you know, doing their own thing. And I think my biggest thing was just really trying to get my name out there and really, you know, build relationships and connections with some of the other local guides and to learn from them. You know, there were times where where there are guides that kind of just came at me and was just like, hey, like, you know, they just saw me as competition and was really, really turned off by that. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that was, to me at first, it was pretty discouraging. Cause I'm like, man, like, wow, like I hope, you know, this fly fishing community, like most people aren't like this, you know, I hope more people are more welcoming rather than, really bashful and discouraging to other people. Cause, you know, I've had guys were like, you know, how long you've been fly fishing or how long have you been doing this? I've been fishing my whole life before I decided to become professional. And, you know, it's like good for them, you know, like sometimes, you know, we have to start somewhere, and this is where I had to start. And I think for me, that was the biggest thing, was just trying to, because I was so new to the game, was just trying to get my feet wet and trying to build my reputation. I think that was kind of the toughest part to deal with. But you know, there were also great people in the community that really helped me and taught me and just, took me under their wing to help me get going. And that was probably my favorite part, is just finding people like that.
Yeah.
And sharing that energy of just being inclusive versus being exclusive.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, I think that's huge. It's huge. I think it's weird sometimes too in different areas of life, you know, in different, you know, pockets of expertise and experience. It is weird how sometimes they can people can get really protective of whatever the craft is that they're working on. And it's a weird thing because you would think there's plenty of room. I mean, obviously people are competitive and it's a business, but at the same time, you know, if you guys share that same passion, it is unfortunate that there are people out there that like kind of like just kind of tuck it over here and just want to keep it all to themselves. Exactly. You know what I'm saying? It's a weird thing. But it's cool that you found some people in that community that weren't like that. And they were, like you said, they were able to mentor you and give you a good perspective of what it could be out there. I think
Totally. And that's, and that's my philosophy too, is I want to pay that forward to, you know, future generations or future guides who want to get, you know, not even just guides, but people who want to get into fly fishing. You know, like it can be intimidating at first, but you know, if you're encouraging to people and if you treat them right, you know, they're going to want to come back and do it and enjoy it. You know, like that's kind of the philosophy that I try to live with, is just to be inclusive and just cheer people on. You know, we're all on the same team.
Yeah, for sure.
Exactly.
I want to ask this question. If I need to cut this, well, you just don't have to answer it if you don't want to, but I feel like something I always enjoyed, like if I ever have someone cut my hair for the first time and I go to the shop, I always like to ask them if they can like see someone come through the door and they're like, oh no. Cause they, you know, you can tell by personalities, especially when you do something for a while, you're like, man, this might be a rough one. When you have clients or customers come to you who are going to do a trip, have there been times where you're like, oh, this might be a long trip, because you can just tell by their demeanor and their personality. It's like, whew, this is going to be, it's gonna be a hard nut to crack. You know what I'm saying? Have you ever had that?
Yeah, 100%. I think it's like that within any industry, you know. Some days require more patience than others.
Sure.
You definitely, you know, get people who, you know, you'll tell them 100 times a day to just, you know, change their cast or change their technique, you know. And it's not like the biggest change ever. It's like one little tweak, but you know, you'll tell them 100 times and they're like, "Oh, I got it." And just totally keep on doing the same bad habit that they've been doing for years.
Oh, that's brutal. And,
you know, sometimes you're just like, you know, sometimes you want to shut off, but you know, I try not to, and just you know, be patient with them. Sometimes you'll crack through, you know, and finally see that aha moment and celebrate with them. Those are the moments I think are special, especially when you're challenging that way.
Sure.
You know, kind of, I, for me, the best way to kind of, I guess have more patience is to have the end goal in mind and try to picture it, so that when it does happen, you know, all that hard work was, you know, all that hard work that you put up with was totally worth it, because you saw that aha moment and they've caught that fish that, you know, they've been working all day for, and they've got a big grin and they want to take a picture with it and text it to all their friends and brag about it.
Yeah.
You know, that makes it totally worth it at the end of the day.
That's awesome. That's why you're good at what you do, man. You're way more. Awesome. I don't think I could do it. I don't think I could do it. I know myself, and it's like I said, I'm pretty patient, but I think that would drive me nuts. So it's better that
it might be different if you saw the way I guide my wife. But
yeah, maybe. That's awesome. Hey, let me ask you this. Oh, you know, I just had this thought pop in my head. So. Happy, you don't know this, but Deb is a huge fan of mermaids. She loves mermaids.
Yeah.
Why? I have no
idea. My daughter is a big fan of mermaids right now.
Okay, perfect. So you might be the right guy to ask about this, because you spend so much time on the water. Let me ask you this very simply. Are mermaids real?
I haven't seen one, but you know, they might be out there.
Hey,
I'll take it. There you go, Deb. You got an ally.
How old is your daughter?
She's 2.5. She'll be 3 and 2 months.
My girl. She knows. We know what's up.
Oh, yeah. You have something in common with a 2.5-year-old, then. How's that feel?
I sure do.
I've dressed up as a merman before, so.
That's awesome.
Oh.
He's a good fly fisherman and a good dad. He's a good guy all the way around. All right. Perfect. Well, I had to ask because, you know, like I said, he spends a lot of time on the water. You never know if Happy saw something and then would give you a little bit of hope, but he left the door open a little bit. You left the door open a little bit.
Bigfoot's another story.
Ooh, oh, hold on.
But I won't get into that. I won't get into that. That might have to be for another day.
What?
I feel like this is the perfect time to get into that.
I know. I want to hear it.
Okay. So, please. Do you have a story? Because it sounds like you do.
No, I don't.
But... Oh, okay.
Do you have thoughts about Bigfoot?
I'm just gonna say, you know, like there's not enough evidence to say that he isn't real, and there's not enough evidence to say that he is real. So it's 50-50.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know much about the Bigfoot story. Is he supposed to be in a certain area? Like, is there
I think like that famous video was taking place, you know, somewhere in Northern California.
Oh, really?
So, really? Yeah. So that big famous black and white video that you've seen, you know, that was in Northern California.
Okay. I had no idea. All right. Bigfoot, mermaids. It's possible. They might be out there. Have you, on your trips, have you ever, I don't know how to ask this. Like, has there been like a surprise where you're going out there fishing? Like, have you had like an interaction with a bear that you weren't expecting, or
did you catch
something that's like, I didn't expect to catch this?
Yeah, totally. So up in Alaska, I mean, you're with bears all the time in the region that we're at, Katmai National Park. It's got the most bear population per capita in anywhere in the world. So, you know, it's not uncommon to see over, you know, anywhere from 20 to 30 bears a day. You know, like your interactions with bears are pretty common up there.
Okay.
There's this one time where we were fishing for salmon, and our clients wanted to keep, or our guests wanted to keep salmon to bring home with them. So, you know, we'd catch salmon all day long, and the limit's like five fish per person. So we'd keep their five fish. And at the end of the day, we'll get together and we'll fillet the fish down by the river and throw the carcasses in the river. But there's this bear that smelt, you know, the salmon, from, you know, miles away. I mean, these bears, they could smell from miles away. Like you'll see a bear, you know, 4 miles away, and you'll see him start coming at you slowly just because their sense of smell is so good. But as we were flaying this fish, you know, usually bears, you know, they keep their distance from you. You know, they're not out there to attack you or anything like that, because there's so much fish and so much food for them that they're not looking at you as a threat or food or anything, unless you're out there messing with their cubs. But there was this bear, there's a river called the Kamishak, and this river is particularly a little bit harder for the bears to get into fish, just because of the number of fish that are in that river, and the way that the river is just, you know, is designed. It's just hard for the bear to catch fish. Mm-hmm. So what most of these bears do is, when, you know, after all these fishermen are done flaying all their fish, they'll come and take the carcasses or whatever scraps are left over. But this one bear was very pushy, and he saw us flaying fish, and he came at us, and we thought he was going to turn away, you know, within like 50 feet or 100 feet or so. But he just got closer and closer and closer. And, you know, there was a time where he got within 20 feet from us. And you know, we thought we were done, you know, like we thought he was coming right at us. He's going to steal a fish, or at least, you know, push us off of it. But we stood our ground, and I had to use bear spray. Usually, I mean, you won't even have to use bear spray for the most part, but I had to use bear spray, and the wind was, you know, coming up river. So I got the whole bear spray back in my face. And, you know, it was a pretty crazy experience. It was definitely the closest bear experience I've had. I've got a video of it that I can send over to you. You know, one of our, you know, guests.
Yeah, please do.
A video of the whole encounter, but it was my closest encounter, and definitely pretty scary.
Jeez, that would be scary for sure. I might be thinking about like which guest I'm going to shove in the bear's direction. It's like,
yeah, right. As long as you can run faster than the other guy, you're good. Yeah,
exactly. It's like, hey, this guy wasn't listening to my techniques. Take him. Yeah, that would be terrifying.
Yeah. Exciting.
Sure. Yeah. Exciting too. If you survive, then it's an exciting story.
Yeah.
Right? Sure. Yeah. Aside from bear encounters and all that, what could you walk us through a trip, or at least one of, I guess, maybe, are they all different? Are they all the same? Is there different, like, what kind of packages, I guess, or services do you offer, or what does that typically look like?
Yeah. So there's about a half dozen of, rivers that I'll guide. And a lot of them, you know, you kind of have to know, what season to fish those rivers, and what fish are running during each season. So a lot of that is, you know, dependent on what fish is running throughout the year. But my rates are pretty simple. You know, I offer half day trips, which is up to 4 hours of fishing, to full day trips up to 8 hours. And it's, you know, very instructional, all hands on. I, you know, I tell all my guests, you know, like I can put you on fish, but I'm not God. I can't make them bite. So, you know, I can do my best to put you in a really good position to catch fish and just teach them something that they haven't learned before. So I provide all of the gear, rods, tackle, flies. The only thing that people really need to bring is a California fishing license is required to fish if you're over, I believe, 16 years old. And a steelhead report card if we're fishing for a steelhead. But it's pretty straightforward. You know, I try to do my best to just outfit the whole trip and just show people a good time. I'll do a shore lunch with people when it's a full day trip. So we'll take a break midday and, you know, I'll bring out the little grill barbecue and we'll either do burgers or tacos on the river.
That's awesome.
I have a drift boat. So I'll take people down on the river. We'll fish from the boat. Or if the river calls for a walk and waiting trip, you know, where you can't really get a boat in, we'll just hike around and fish from spot to spot.
That is awesome.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So how does it work as far as location? Do you have multiple locations that they can choose from? Or do you basically say, hey, I'm taking a trip to this location. And then if they want to go, they can go on that specific trip.
Yeah. It's a little bit of both. So I'll typically give them a recommendation of what's fishing well. When people reach out to me, so, you know, if someone reached out to me now and they're like, hey, you know, we want to book a trip with you, you know, what would you recommend? So, you know, according to whatever river is fishing well, I'll point in that direction. But there are times where someone is like, hey, you know, I just bought my first boat and I want to learn this river. You know, can we go out and can you just teach me this river? Like that river may not necessarily be fishing well, but I'll take them out on that river and show them where all the runs are and all the good fishing spots and all the hazards and stuff like that. So that, you know, they're not making a mistake out there when they're on their own.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Have you seen a huge like uptick in business since this whole pandemic has happened? Cause I imagine it's like it's something that people would want to escape to, right? It's an outdoor activity. They don't have to worry about some of the different things that they might have to, if they were closer to a city, like, has it been pretty busy?
Yeah, 100%. A lot of people, I think the fly fishing industry in general has been booming since the whole pandemic, just cause people, like you said, they just want to be out, you know, people are working from home. So they're making their own schedules. They have more time to go out and fish. So you definitely have been seeing a little bit more pressure on the rivers, from this pandemic, which is great. I mean, you know, people need to get out, and I think it's awesome because a lot of times I'll take people even on the American River here in Sacramento, you know, we'll do a float trip down the river and they're just shocked that there's a river this pretty in the middle of an urban area. You know, like some of these people have lived here for 15 plus years and it's their first time ever on the river. And it's just cool to just be able to offer, you know, people that escape or just, you know, to just connect with nature.
Yeah.
Be very healthy.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Let me ask you this too. I hate snakes. How often do you see snakes out there? Be honest, happy.
I don't really see too many. I've only had a couple of encounters. I had one encounter where I almost stepped on a rattlesnake. Like if he didn't rattle, I would have stepped on him for sure. And I was, you know, I was wet wading, so I didn't have waders on. I was just in shorts and you know, some wet boots. But yeah, I hate snakes too. So that's, you know, I'm always protecting myself and wearing waders when I'm out there. But yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I had to ask. I hate snakes. I dead like snakes.
I have no problem with snakes. I mean, the poisonous snakes, I mean, obviously I don't want to go near them. There was a time where I actually almost touched a rattlesnake as well. I was picking up a package on my front doorstep and I picked it up and I was looking at it and I heard a tss.
Yeah.
And I looked down and a baby rattlesnake was wrapped around it on the ground. So when I picked it up, it was just right there.
Oh,
I like threw that package and like ran off my porch. Like it was the most terrifying thing, but I don't mind snakes. I don't mind holding snakes. At one of my, this might make you too cringe, or anyone else listening. I went to a Super Bowl thing a few years ago, right? Pre-pandemic. And, one of a couple there, their kid, where the house we were at, his kid had a, I don't know. What is that big snake called? I don't know. Giant snake. A cobra. Python. I don't know. Something. I don't remember the name, but like, and I was like, ooh, let me see. And they're like, you want to look? And I'm like, yeah, let me see. And so the little kid let me like hold it. So it was like wrapped around me like throughout the whole game. And I'm just like walking around with it. I'm like petting it.
Through the whole game?
I can't do that.
Like it just like sat like around my arm, around my tummy, on my shoulder. It like, you know, was like moving. And so I would, you just have to relax. And like, anyway, so.
You can say it however you want right now. It's not going to change my mind. That sounds awful.
I think snakes are so cool.
You couldn't just watch the football game. You had to hold the snake.
Yeah, I didn't want to watch the football game.
I'm okay with that.
See, Happy. And Happy's in nature all the time. And he's even like, no, I'm good.
I got you guys. We see a snake.
Happy, that's the real reason why we do this over Zoom now, is because I'm afraid she's just going to bring a snake out into the studio and I'm not with it. So
yeah, good.
Hey, did you, I please forgive me. I know you said the two places that you really enjoyed fishing, but did you say where your dream spot would be?
No, I haven't, but it's hard to say because there's so many destination places, you know, that you could go fly fishing for, just a lot of exotic species. It's tough to say. I'd probably say my favorite place would be the Seychelles.
Oh, where's that at?
So that is, I think it's in, somewhere in like East Africa.
Oh, nice.
So it's in the Indian Ocean.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I bet there'll be snakes in the water there. Swimming in the water. It was a boa. That's what it was. A boa that I had.
Oh, yeah. A boa. Isn't that the one that can just squeeze the life out of you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but if you relax, you have to relax. If they feel you tense up, then they tense up. You just have to relax.
So I heard the story of this. I don't know if it's like an urban myth or, you know, some story, but I've heard this story go around where this lady, she has a python or a boa, and or maybe it was like an anaconda that she thought it was a boa or something like that. But she would occasionally sleep with her snake. Like she would have it in bed with her, go to sleep with her. And, you know, she was doing this for like a long time. So she got very comfortable with the snake. And there was a time where the snake for 2 weeks, the snake wasn't eating. So, you know, like she was getting worried. Like she took the snake to the vet and was just telling him, hey, my snake hasn't been eating for a couple weeks. I don't know what's wrong. And the vet tells her that the snake has been starving itself for 2 weeks so that it could size her up and eat her in her sleep.
Shut up.
Oh
yeah.
No way.
I don't know if it's like an urban myth or something like that, but you know,
oh my God.
Someone told me that story before and I was like, wow. I mean, it makes sense. You know why the snake wasn't eating for a couple weeks.
Sure.
Wow.
That's wild. That's
wild.
See, but I believe you. Like, I hate snakes that much. Like, I'm not even willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. It's like, no, a snake would never do that. No, I'm like, oh, a snake for sure would do that. It's got those beady little eyes. I want no part of it. That's wild. And they could too, right? Like, that's, you hear those stories all the time about places where, you know, a person has a boa constrictor or whatever kind of snake it is.
Oh, yeah.
And it gets into the neighbor's backyard. And then you just see the snake in the neighbor's backyard. And then you see like their dog in mm-hmm. the center of the
boa. Yeah. Yeah, I've seen pictures like that before.
Yeah, and you just, which is weird too, because it can eat like anything.
Yeah,
yeah. So yeah, thanks, Deb, for.
Well, I wouldn't sleep with a snake in the bed. That's for sure. And I figured that kid, it's like a little 10-year-old kid snake. So I'm like, well, if he can handle it, then I can. So
whatever makes you feel better. Whatever makes you feel better. We'll get back to the fishing though. So. So they have, I think you mentioned this earlier, they have competitions, right? Like fly fishing competitions.
Yeah. Yep.
Like I've heard that before, but I guess I understand, like, is it based off of, well, first of all, have you competed in one?
And then, no.
Like, how, you haven't done it?
No.
Have you thought about it?
I've thought about it here and there, but you know, not really. I kind of just enjoy it just for recreational purposes.
Okay. But do you know, like, how does it work though? Is it based on the size of the fish or how many fish you catch or?
Yeah.
I've never understood.
Yeah, typically, you know, the tournaments that I've seen around is, you know, usually they're like, some will be a day or some will be a couple of days. And it's usually, rank it by a couple of things. Like one is biggest fish caught in the tournament will get a prize. And then the second is just overall weight. So, it, you know, usually it's like, you know, a team, like two person to a boat or something like that. and it's whichever boat combined has the highest, you know, weight number will win too. So I think it's just combined weight and then also biggest fish.
Okay.
It's typically how they do it.
Got it. That actually, that leads me into my, I don't know if you were thinking this, Deb, but I need to know, first I need to know, Happy, what is the biggest fish? This is like your time to tell your fish story. Like, what's the biggest fish you've caught? And then what's a fish story you heard from someone where you're like, I don't know if the fish you're saying you caught was really that big.
Yeah. I'd say the biggest fish I caught was about a 29 inch rainbow trout. You know, rainbow trout, like in Alaska, you know, if you catch anything over 30 inches, that's like a trophy trout. Okay. You know, I caught that trout here in California, which is surprisingly really big for California. If you were to match that up with an Alaskan rainbow, it's, you know, it's pretty good too.
Yeah.
So about 29 inches, you know, that's, you know, what, over a couple feet.
Yeah.
Pretty nice rainbow trout.
It's huge.
As far as like fish stories go, I mean, you hear fish stories all the time, you know, yeah. Like, you know, it's, fishermen are some of the people that like to exaggerate their stories the most, you know. It's
sure.
You know, we always say, you know, you can tell people however big your fish is. If so, like if you lose a fish, you can tell people how, you know, you can tell people how that fish could be as big as you make it to be, because you lost it. You know, people usually
right.
say, oh man, I just lost, you know, like a 10 pound trout, you know, but you know, who's going to question them? You know, you never got the fish in or whatever, but
right.
You know, no one's going to believe that. That's a little much.
Yeah. That's what I've always, I mean, I've heard, I don't know too many people that fish that much, but you always hear those stories, but it's like, hey, have you ever seen Jaws? It was a little bigger than that. It's like, what are you talking about?
It's always the fish that you lose, yeah. Which is the biggest one, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. Deb, do you fish?
No, I mean, but I have a long time ago. So my dad fishes.
Uh-huh.
My dad would
He's a big outdoor guy, right?
Yeah. My dad fishes and hunts. You know, I got my hunting license when I was like 12. It's expired since then. I'm sure I did my fishing license too at some point. Oh yeah. I would fish with him all the time when I was little. Like there's pictures of me in like a pink dress with a uh-huh. fishing pole, like stuff like that. yeah. It's been a while though. It's been quite a while since I've done that, but okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Got it.
So
yeah.
I'm trying to even remember what it was like. And yeah, that's how long
it's been that long ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been that long ago. We just have one more question for you, Happy. Actually, two more questions. And then, you know, we want to be respectful of your time, but, yeah. So I imagine that when you go out, fly fishing and you do your guided tours, you probably get, it's probably a big age range, right? Like you probably have everybody from like young kids that are doing it mm-hmm. to like older totally. Clients. So, is there like a big difference in I guess training or trying to teach fly fishing to the different ages, or is it something that like anybody at any age can really pick up?
I like to tend to be on the side where, you know, it's anyone can pick it up. Just because, you know, I want to give people that, positive, you know, reinforcement, so that, you know, they're not discouraged when they come out on the water, or they don't have any false pretense in their mind of what it's going to be.
Sure.
So that you could, especially with beginners, so that, you know, I always tell beginners, you know, when they tell me, oh, it's my first time fishing. And I'm like, great. That's awesome. You know, that means you don't have any bad habits that we have to break. So, right. You know, everything that you're going to learn is going to be very foundational and proper.
Sure.
You know, versus someone who, you know, you'll get guys who, you know, fish a long time, and, you know, you'll get good anglers and bad anglers in between, you know, bad anglers, you know, you just kind of have to work with them and just help them get better and break some bad habits that they may have learned, by just doing it themselves for so long. But then you'll also get guys who have, you know, who are always booking guided trips. So they fish with guides all the time. So they, you know, they've picked up things properly. They know how to fish. And usually those guys, you know, get into more fish than say the beginner, just because they have more experience,
sure.
Which makes it, you know, an easier day to guide. Cause you just really show them where the fish are and, you know, kind of let them loose, versus someone new and, You kind of have to be a little bit more hands-on, which is fun because it, you know, it makes the day exciting, you know, it gives me something to do out there and, you know, instruct them. And, you know, that's what I really like to do is just to really teach people and help them.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's crazy. You know, it's so happy. You know, it's crazy. I just realized this. My dad is actually on a fishing trip right now in Arizona.
Nice.
Oh, cool.
I don't know why I just remembered that.
That's pretty cool.
I don't know what he's fishing for, but yeah.
Have you been there to Arizona and fished?
No, I haven't.
Okay. I don't know. Yeah. I guess I would never, I mean, I don't know, again, I don't know anything about fishing, but I wouldn't even associate Arizona with fishing, but.
Right. Cause it's like a desert.
That's what I always think of. Yeah. So maybe he's fishing for snakes.
He's going to bring one.
He's going to bring one home for you.
He knows me. Yeah. Snake, reptiles. Oh yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
I was the weird little girl in my backyard that would like collect snails and frogs and salamanders and all that stuff and wanted mice and turtles as pets. Yeah.
There you go.
I feel like I've told this story before. I don't know if I did on this podcast or the Character Combine podcast, but my sister, when we were younger, my sister would be in our backyard and she had this thing with worms. So she would dig up worms in the backyard. She's going to hate that I'm telling the story, but it's good. It's good podcast content. So she would get these worms and she would get like 5 or 6 or 7 worms. And then she would put them in a little short pan in the backyard with water and she would bathe them, you know, and she was like, oh, I'm going to get the dirt off them and bathe them. But then what she would do is she would put a bow on them and she would take a blade of grass and then she would wrap it around the worm and then she'd pull it. Well, obviously the worm can't withstand that.
Right.
And so you go to the backyard and my mom and dad would just see this massacre of worms in the backyard all cut in half because she was tying up these bows on them. It was the grossest thing. Ask her next time you see her, Dad. It's a good,
that's
it's
funny.
And she would just do this all the time. You know, it's just such a sweet thing. And then, you know, it turned into a horror movie for these poor things.
Was she horrified? Did she understand? Or did she just like, oh, that doesn't fit. And she goes to the next worm or like, was she upset?
Here's the thing. She's pretty smart. And so you would think that, you know, she would be upset, but like, she just kept doing it. So I'm kind of thinking she was a psychopath. Yeah. Talk to her about that. Talk to her about that next time. Yeah.
That's funny. Okay.
Yeah. Right. But yeah, she used to do that all the time. And I still give her a hard time about that. It's like, this was pretty disgusting, you know? And like, she was trying to do a nice thing, but it just turned into a bloodbath in the backyard.
At that point, you might as well put it on a hook and use it for fishing.
Yeah.
There you go. You took that story full circle. Well done. Hey, so before we let you go, Happy, we like to wrap this podcast up by giving you an opportunity to share with us, we like to call it a connection suggestion. So it could either be a brand, an organization, a person that you feel like our audience should be connected with. If you have a couple, you'd throw a couple out there, but anybody or anything that you think that we should be connected with and where we can follow?
Yeah, I would definitely recommend anyone who's wanting to get into fly fishing. You know, there's a local fly shop here in Sacramento called Keeney's Fly Shop.
Yeah.
They're right next to Capital Christian Center if anyone knows where that's at. But you know, they're very welcoming and they're very inclusive to anyone who's looking to get into fly fishing. So, you know, it doesn't matter your background or your age. They're just super welcoming and good place to get started. You know, they offer full guide service there. So I guide through the shop there too. Oh, cool. You know, as well. They have like 4 or 5 other guides that work through the shop as well. So they offer a pretty good service and most of the guides there will get people, you know, dialed and up to speed if you're looking to get into fly fishing. So I definitely would recommend anyone in that direction.
Perfect. And then where can people follow you on social media, websites, all that stuff to get connected and hopefully, you know, get out there on the water?
Yeah. So I'm mainly just on Instagram. So I'll do everything on Instagram. So I'll share stories and trips that I've done. And, you know, my Instagram handle is goodwaterflyfishing.com. That's my website, but just goodwaterflyfishing.
Yeah.
Pretty easy to remember, you know, just, yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Yeah. We'll make sure we'll tag Happy and all that stuff too. So you guys will have a chance and definitely, And I'm not just saying that this because he's here, but definitely check out his Instagram page because he does post some just really beautiful shots of the places he's been. Happy New Yen. New Wen. I tried again. I was trying to redeem myself. I jacked it up again. I should have left it.
No worries. They're good.
I should have left it.
I know.
Yeah. Dang, okay. I should have let you do this one, Deb. You should have introduced Happy.
I know. Yeah. I knew how to pronounce his last name.
I know, because this whole week leading up to this podcast, she was saying, it's like, okay, so we have Happy and then your last, I'm not doing it again. Happy and then your last name. And she nailed it. She nailed it every time. It's like, I should have known better. I knew I was going to jack it up.
I have a lot of students with the last name Nguyen in my class.
Yeah. It's very common.
Yeah.
And I apparently only know one person that has that last name and I can't even get it right. So, so Happy, man. Thank you so much for joining us, man. And good luck with everything. Good luck with your business. And we hope, man, it just continues to flourish and do well.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate you guys having me on. Hopefully I had something good to say in there for you guys.
Oh, this was fun. Are you kidding me? I love hearing stories, and now I have a greater fear of snakes after the story you told. So, but I'm not going to sleep with a snake either though. So I guess I'm okay in that sense.
Yeah. No, be wise.
Yeah. Deb might have an issue, but not me. So
no, I won't sleep with a snake.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Happy. Thank you so much. Like Josh said, we haven't interviewed someone in your line of work before on
not even close.
On Connectable or our other podcast, Character Combine. So this is cool. Been fun. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. So yes, Josh, thank you so much.
Follow us.
Oh, I almost forgot. Good call. Okay. You guys can follow us at Connectable Podcast on Instagram, Connectable Podcast on Facebook, Connectable Pod on Twitter, Connectable Podcast on YouTube. And that's it. That's all we got. So we don't have a website, and you know, just check out our social media stuff. There you go. Awesome. All right, Happy. Take care, man. We'll see you later.
Thank you, guys. See ya.